Hello, and welcome to this pre-recorded millennial session. And this is with an old friend of mine. He has a channel now called The Franklin, but prior to that, he had a channel called Reactionary Expat. And of course, to many people on this channel, on my channel, he's well known by that name. But he hasn't appeared, apart from a very short recording I put up a few days ago, he hasn't appeared on my channel for quite some time. I think it was September. Was it? Was it September 2016? Just before I went to America?
Oh, I can't remember. It's been so long.
Well, that was never my intention, but it happened that way. So welcome back to the channel, expat.
Thanks for having me.
And welcome to Millennial 2018. I did want you back on last year's, but I remember you didn't want to do it at that time because you were so busy. So I suppose we should, because a lot of people have asked me, where is expat and what's he up to nowadays? So let's go to what happened in the first place. You were running your channel,
yeah,
and I think you started that in 2015.
Yeah, it was the middle of 2015.
Right. Okay. And then the alt-right came about as a big thing around that same time, actually. And then the whole Trump mania thing started around that same time. And we all got sort of caught up in it. And then what happened?
Well, I decided, so I used to live in Taiwan, the Republic of China. And I decided to move back to Australia with my family. So we began that process, when was that, last year? I think August or September of last year. We brought two dogs over with us, so it was a fairly protracted process because the quarantine laws in Australia are fairly strict. So I knew that I was going to wind the channel down before I came back here. So we came back here at the end of March. And I wanted to start something new for a number of reasons.
Let's summarize what your channel was in the first place. What was it?
Okay. I covered a lot of different topics. Sometimes I covered economics and personal finance and that sort of thing. Mostly I'd say it was about social commentary, some political commentary as well. I wanted to move away from the political commentary, the sort of direct commenting upon current events and that sort of thing. So I wanted to change the focus of the channel slides. And a lot of the stuff that I want to do, I'm yet to do with the channel. I want to do more cultural stuff, and I want to do more sort of daily solutions, and but also long-term plans for dealing with modernity and sort of political reality that we face. So I've done a tiny bit of stuff on homeschooling, but I want to do more stuff on homeschooling and also more stuff on sort of homesteading and that kind of thing. That's slow, building that stuff up. That's part of what I've been doing since I've been back. But yeah, I wanted to change the focus. Also, I just changed the channel because I was no longer an expat, so I knew I was no longer going to be an expat. So it wasn't going to make sense to still be reactionary expat. So it was an opportunity to change things. I've changed the aesthetics of the channel too. So I've explained this a little bit at my channel already, but one of the things that I do is each of my videos begins with some photos I take from daily life and with a different piece of classical music than the one I used to use at my old channel.
Yeah, it was always the one from the film Master and Commander.
Yeah, it's the Boccherini. Now I use Ray Vaughan Williams. Which one is it? It's Fantasia on a theme by Thomas Tallis. And then I end the channel with some artwork. I'm trying to sort of, well, I explained this at length in a particular video that I made earlier this year, but basically I'm trying to sort of expose people to beautiful things, good things, true things, that sort of thing. So I finish with some classical music. That's the Giovanni Sanchez. and also some artwork, some Western artwork, usually from the very late 19th century, early 20th century. So I sort of add those as little bookends to encourage people to get interested in classical music and Western art as well. Because I think that's something that's lacking on the dissident rise. A lot of people talk about saving Western civilization, but they don't actually know anything about Western civilization.
Yes. Well, this was always a problem. I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about the history of this, the development of the alt-right and the dissident right and so on. But I remember it was always a concern of yours and a complaint of yours, that we would talk about these things but not actually do them ourselves. And of course, I shared that concern at the time and still share it now.
Yeah. I think rather than being against things, we need to be for things. And we also need to, it's not enough to say to people, well, we used to have this particular thing in society and then bemoan the fact that we don't have that thing anymore if we're not going to practice it in a sense. And I think also the left is at a point where it's so grotesque that if we can provide an alternative that is clearly beautiful, then people will flock to that. People are disgusted by a lot of the things on the left.
I think at this point the left is becoming so direct, hideous, and outspoken and extrovert in its ideas and extreme in its ideas that, yeah, the only word is hideous.
So if we can present, here's this beautiful thing, because art and music in particular are, you interact with them in an involuntary way in many regards. You can intellectualize them, but if you see something beautiful, it's just beautiful to you. Likewise, if you hear something beautiful, it's just beautiful to you. So it's a sort of a propaganda thing as well. That if there's that other thing that's hideous and then there's this thing here that's really nice, then that will start, that will immediately make the other things that we do or say slightly more attractive.
And persuasive as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's interesting. Interesting. Just sorry, a bit of a tangent. It interested me what you said, that we spend a lot of time bemoaning what we've lost, because you and I met each other on a paleo conservative forum. Like that was where you and I met in the first place I think it was the very start of 2012. Yeah, and that was how, because we've known each other for nearly 7 years now, actually. Before I started my channel. And, well, like 2 years before. And so, and the point is that something I often say about paleocons, in fact, pretty much the only thing I say about paleocons, is how miserablest they are. How they're always going on about what's been lost and decline, and it's all just terrible. And, well, you know, it's fine to observe that, but then what? Because it's not healthy just to sort of marinate and obsess over it. This is why I really personally outgrew Theodore Dalrymple, by the way, because he was the focus of the forum upon which we met. And now I just can't read his stuff. I cannot bear it, because it's just he seems to enjoy it, you know. And I think that's maybe true of paleocons in general, but much less so. Definitely of him. I think he really actually enjoys it.
Yeah, it's a distinct possibility. I mean, he's old too, and so
I think he's about 70 now.
It doesn't. At that age, I think people don't necessarily have very much to look forward to, and a lot to look backwards to. But I think we need to sort of have this idea that there are things.
Well, see, yes, yeah, so that's what I was going to say. So when I discovered what was then called the reactosphere, it was paleocon in its sort of in its morality, its moral outlook, and cultural assumptions, but it was also sort of something modern and contemporary and aware of the world as it is today, and but not wholly scathing off it, sort of accepting of it as a situation. And then that became the alt-right, or was replaced by the alt-right, which seemed very energetic and positive and optimistic for a while. But the problem there, I think, that you and I are sort of identifying right now, is that that was a sort of shallow optimism, because, and that comes with large numbers of people. There's not vetting, and also the people in control of it don't necessarily have a way of coordinating things so that people so that things are done properly. They might not know how to do things properly. You know, so the point is that you end up with a large number of people with lots of energy, but not the proper grounding in order to do what they want to do, which is to revitalize Western civilization. I mean, that's a very, very lofty goal. And I think that, I'm not saying it shouldn't be done or shouldn't be attempted. I'm saying that we need to do it better. And I think that became increasingly clear throughout 2016 and 17, that this just isn't working, you know, for various reasons. And that was one of them, I think.
I think one of the major flaws is that people are too focused on political activism. And the neo-reactionary is actually had a fair bit of insight in this regard. The political activism in the current year, if you like, is not going to be effective. I think what is going to be effective is doing local things, trying to build positive things, trying to interact with people to create a vision of the future that doesn't involve directly rubbing up against the enemy, if you like, and acknowledging that little things need to be sorted out before big things can be sorted out, I think. So one of the things I've been trying to do since I've been back is to get involved, well, firstly, to find other interesting people, not necessarily on the right, but other interesting people, and trying to do things with them, trying to do positive things with them. So whether that's finding people of like mind and socializing with them and building networks and that sort of thing, or getting involved in local organizations in my local community, or sort of cultural organizations, that sort of thing. I won't go into any great detail, but
yeah.
The idea that if we want these nice things, then we have to, we can't assume that other people are going to pick up the slack. If we want society to be functional, we need to make it functional as much as we can. And acknowledging that we won't necessarily be these great historic figures who have influenced millions of people, but if we can influence a few people around us, and then that can sort of ripple out like ripples on a pond, then we can actually do a lot. But we have to get our hands dirty at that micro level, in a sense, because it's no good saying, well, nobody likes classical music anymore, or nobody likes Western art, or nobody likes this thing or that thing, if we don't get involved in those projects and maintain them or contribute to them in some way. Or my local community is really dysfunctional, or nobody talks to each other, or this sort of thing. Well, get involved in those things and try to influence them positively, not necessarily in a very overt political way, but just being there, turning up, is half of the battle.
Yeah, and also setting an example that other people can follow, because obviously people are far more likely to respond to an example right in front of them, what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's tangible proof that it can be done.
I can give you an example of that. So I take my son to a whole lot of activities, and one of the activities that he participates in, when we first started going there, I always used to say to him, have you thanked the teacher at the end of the lesson? It's a sporting type activity. So he would go off, and most of the time he does it now without being prompted. But initially, he was the only child there who did that. And I've noticed since that about two or three other children also do it now, and their parents tell them to do it. So I don't know whether that was because he did it every week, and it took probably a month or two before anyone else started doing it. But I'd like to think that that's had a small effect upon other people.
I certainly hope so. I hope that it's that way, because that is nice, not only for you, but because it means that we can actually spread good behavior, you know, through our own actions. That would be a real cause for optimism. But are you still there?
Oh, sorry, I'm muted accidentally.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot that we could bemoan, and certainly around where I am, there's no shortage of people who are really quite atrocious. But we can try to have a positive effect, I suppose, by saying I'm going to be involved in these things. I'm not going to expect other people to pick up the slack. Mm. I'm going to do it.
And one other thing that is suggested by what you said a few minutes ago is that in order to do these kinds of things, we don't necessarily need the other people involved to be of our political flavor.
No, absolutely not.
Because there is a danger, and I'm not saying that this applies to anyone in particular, I'm just saying that there is a danger that we assume that they've got to be right-wing, they've got to be conservative, they've got to be nationalist or whatever. And I knew one guy who's, and I hope he, well, I'll put it the way I perceived it. Maybe I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I hope that he isn't offended, but this is the way I perceived it. His excuse for not having a job was that he couldn't work with normies. And, you know,
right.
I thought it was an excuse. I thought it was ridiculous, and I told him that. I thought it was fucking stupid. I mean, that's like the heroin addict who says, I'll give up heroin once I find the perfect therapist. Because he knows he's never going to find the perfect therapist, so therefore he never needs to give up heroin. So the same guy, yeah. In the same way, this guy, he's never going to need to get a job because it will be full of normies. So if he's got this proviso that, well, I just can't work with normies, then that is an excuse to be a failure forever. And
yeah.
This kind of thing is just terrible. But even when it's not that extreme, I mean, that's an extreme example. Even when it's not that extreme, you still unwittingly limit your options as a person and in various other ways when you say, well, it has to be nationalists that I talk to. I can only socialize with people of this stripe. And I think that this is not a dreadfully pervasive problem in the distant right, but it is there. And I think it's something that young people especially need to be aware of. Because at the same time, there is the dilemma, which I addressed in my, I don't know, the first year of the channel, which is, can you have liberal friends? And I think the answer is more nuanced than I gave at the time, which, I mean, I think my answer at the time was basically, yeah, but only on your terms. And if they don't accept your terms, then fuck them. I think that was essentially what I said at the time. But what I would say now is, yes, if you can lay off the politics and they can lay off the politics. And I think at that time, it seemed like the SJW thing was really taking off, and it was. And we were really taking off the alt-right and as a thing. And so it was very easy to just go full throttle with that and assume, well, we simply can't. Now, still today, and as we see every day, the left are very outspoken, but liberals are as self-righteous as they've ever been. But that doesn't mean that everyone is. It just means that, you know, they are. The stereotypical SJW is still fucking insufferable. But the normie isn't. You know, the normie, and I don't use that word derogatorily, it's just shorthand, it's just sort of, you know, politically inert almost. When it comes to elections, and that can be disastrous, but still, from day to day, they're politically inert, and that means that, well, you can talk to them about other things, you can have other things in common with them, and you can do other things with them. So, you know, you don't need to sort of And you don't need to brandish your politics. That's another thing. Because sometimes that's counterproductive and you just scare people away.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things too that I found interesting is that, I mean, I interact with all sorts of different people. So on the one hand, I do interact with some people who are like, or who have similar ideas to my own. I met up with four of my subscribers last weekend. So there's that at one end, right through to full-on normies at the other end. And I do know some people who are sort of red-pilled or groups of people who are red-pilled in certain ways, not in others. But a couple of things that are interesting are, firstly, if you can meet people who are red-pilled in certain ways, then you can still get access to those things. I mean, people don't have to be all things to you. They can be certain things.
Yes.
And the other thing is that it's surprising, I think, if you go to certain organizations or that kind of thing on certain themes or topics, you will actually meet some people who are quite reactionary. For instance, if you get involved in the arts, now there are a lot of people in the arts who are very left wing. So it depends what sort of arts movements you get involved with. Some, I mean, obviously, if you're involved in modern art or something like that, it'd be a complete write off. But certain of these forms of the arts do have, along with those very left-wing people, there are certain people who are quite reactionary, and surprisingly so. For instance, my wife became friends with a woman her own age through these things, and I would have assumed that this young lady would have been somewhat left-wing, and in some ways she is, but in other ways she's incredibly reactionary. I was really surprised to hear some of her opinions on things, actually. She's incredibly reactionary. And it might be that because I'm in the countryside and a lot of the people around here have grown up here and that sort of thing, they do have some surprisingly reactionary ideas about all sorts of things. So it can be a case of joining these organizations and, you know, maybe 10% of them or 20% of them or what have you are actually quite right-wing. They don't go around and announce it to everyone, but once you get to know them a little bit better, you find out that that's the case. There's another guy I've met through that organization. He's a lot older than I am, who's extremely right-wing, and he's well-educated and all of the rest of it. So we don't need everyone to be like us. If we can find a few people in each group, then that's the basis for a network.
Yeah, and exactly. Something I would just add on to what I said earlier. I'm not saying that you should, like people in general, people who are listening, I'm not saying that you shouldn't seek out red-pilled friends and that, you know, you should just consort with liberals and normies. I'm saying that you should do both. And you should be open to doing both. But I also think that part of the problem hitherto has been that because people were so isolated, because they didn't have red-pilled friends, that sort of was that drove them to be isolated and alienated. Because if you don't have that as a sort of basis, then you don't know how to go forward. And I think that if we do manage to set up social networks, and I mean in IRL, then people are probably going to learn to be more outgoing in general. And so you'll have your red pill friends, but you'll also have your more normie friends. And it's not a sort of a desperate situation like it was for many, many people in 2015, 16, 17. You know, I think that is the feeling that I have in general about the movement, is that we're becoming less extreme, less self-marginalizing now. And a bit more integrated with the mainstream, which I think is it's healthy for us as people, and I think it's necessary for us for the movement.
And I think a very important thing that people often overlook is that if we can work on ourselves to the point where we seem like people who are well put together, and then interact with normies. Again, it's the thing that if they look at someone who is grotesque, and then they look at someone who's not grotesque, to some extent, normies are very concerned about optics. They're very concerned about
social acceptability.
Yeah, and they very much associate aesthetics and all of that sort of stuff with the underlying ideas. The two are inextricably linked in their minds. So they want to be the cool people, the beautiful people, all of that sort of thing. And if they're presented with someone who's physically grotesque and whose life is a mess and all of that sort of stuff, and on the other hand, they're presented with someone who's well put together, they're going to be more open to those people's ideas. And you don't have to push them in a really big way all the time. In fact, they don't want that. And that annoys them about the left. But if they just get little hints here and there, often it can be what you don't say rather than what you say, then they will start to associate these things almost unconsciously. And that we can sort of bring them to us simply by how we present ourselves and by turning up as well, and by not being crazy, by turning up and appearing quite rational.
I mean, that was something that always really annoyed me. I mean, it's obviously I'm not the most conventional character myself, but nonetheless, it really, and I'm saying that as a caveat, because I know that people will attack me for that if I don't say it. But the point is that something that always annoyed me was those elements in the movement who insisted on being as extreme as possible and sort of out there and aggressive and in your face with the body, because it's just, who the hell is going to respond well to that? I don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's this concept of become worthy, and people who can do that will just bring these over people, these over people, these people over, slowly but surely, I think. And also because if they associate certain ideas with people who are kind of a caricature, then it's easy for them to dismiss those ideas. Or if they have similar ideas themselves, to start questioning themselves or to worry about how others will perceive them. But if they see that there are other people who seem quite normal, quite reasonable, and so on, who share similar ideas, then it makes it more acceptable for them to believe those things and then eventually to express those ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this, you can summarize it all really by saying that I think it's, in my view, and I think you agree with this, it's important for each of us to work on himself and become, you know, an accomplished person to whatever extent that is possible for each of us. Because then, you know, you will be better, you'll be more content in general, you'll be better at conveying our ideas to people in general, and also our ideas won't be the thing that you stake your identity on. I mean, I've said this many times, this is not some new thing for me. I've said this to people I remember saying it in the Jordan Peterson speech back in February of this year. Don't take a coward's refuge in individualism, but also don't take a coward's refuge in identitarianism. There are ways to use both of those things in a cowardly manner that absolves you of responsibility.
Yeah. I think I'm glad you mentioned Jordan Peterson, because...
Well, I've just cleaned my room after all. Well, I'm in the middle of cleaning my room. So.
Right. I mean, he's selling a whole other thing, but... Yeah, we need to offer credible alternatives to people, and starting on ourselves, starting on the way we interact with people, the way we try to form little networks and all of that sort of stuff, and try to get those people to do similar things. I think we need to do all of that kind of groundwork rather than focus on trying to change the geopolitical landscape or that kind of thing. Maybe some people can do that. I think I don't think our time is that. I don't think that's a possibility really right now.
I think that what we can do is build up our numbers for now, but yeah. and that is best done the proper way, which is the long way of building up a culture. That is definitely what we can do for now. But I think that actual political change is I would say at least 10 years away. But I might be wrong. Yeah. I mean, I might be wrong because I can see that, like, what's going on in Italy right now, in Poland and Hungary, and in France, of course, right now with these yellow vest pros. I mean, I don't know. But I do think that from our point of view, it's best to assume that, you know, this is not going to happen next year or this year or whatever. It's we've got some time and to do this properly, and we should do it properly for our own sakes as well as for the political reasons.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so, I mean, one of the things I've found this year is I've been frustrated at the pace of progress, and I'm trying to put that more in perspective and say, well, Rome wasn't built in a day. And I'm talking at a personal level here as well. But saying that this is going to be a long-term project as individuals, as small groups, even as a society or cultural civilization. But we have to take baby steps and constant incremental progress. So that's why I'm interested in doing these other things like more self-sufficiency and homeschooling and all of these kinds of things, because they're small gains, and that's what we need, small gains, lots of small gains, because in some those will be enormous gains.
Yeah, and also just a sense of, you know, constant small gains, that means constant progress. And you might be occasionally frustrated by the pace of it, but at least you know that you're constantly moving forwards. I mean, I think that's very important for morale, both as an individual and as a community, an online community. So then, to summarize, then, because I think this is a good way to end it. What can people get from the Franklin Channel?
Well, I still offer political, or not so much political, more sociological analysis, and I try to do that, you know, I mean, sometimes it comes off as black-pilled, but I'm not actually black-pilled. I try to do that with, rather than just saying this is the situation and possibly offering unrealistic ways of responding to it, I try to get people thinking about how they can do these other things in their own lives. I intend to do more stuff. It's a matter of sorting certain things out and various distractions, but I intend to do more things that are sort of directly actionable in terms of homesteading, homeschooling, more cultural output, all of this sort of stuff. But for now, at least, philosophical insights and also some sorts of some advice on how to respond to these things rather than just being full of despair about the state of the world.
Yeah.
I mean, the trouble is there's a lot of stuff that I do on a daily basis that is a lot more positive than social analysis, because the social analysis is pretty grim, actually. There's a lot of stuff I do on a daily basis, but I don't want to go into what I do on a daily basis. I don't want to keep my private life private.
Of course.
A lot of it's similar to what I used to do, but I try to put a little bit more of a practical focus on it.
I have to say that your new output on the Franklin Channel does have a very, it's not a hugely different tone, but it's very noticeable to me that it's it there is a sense of more optimism about it, basically. There's a sense of more, well, practicality about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, just in terms of how I'm living, it's particularly for the last year that I was in Taiwan, I really felt like I was spinning my wheels. I knew that I was not going to stay there. And pardon me, and I mean, there was a limited amount of work that I could actually do there because I wasn't Taiwanese and I didn't like the sort of the high density living and all of that sort of stuff. Now I live in the countryside. So there are things that I can do. So for instance, yesterday I did stuff in the garden. I installed this sort of frame around a tree and put a big net over the tree because it's growing fruit at the moment. So things like that, very practical things. Planted out a whole lot of seedlings yesterday in one of my garden beds. So that sort of thing. I can actually do things now. So that's probably part of the reason why it sounds more optimistic as well, because I can do practical things rather than just commenting upon the state of the world.
Yeah. And I remember going back to sort of extreme opposite of this, we used to do month in review hangouts with Hill Hominid. And a lot of people ask me, even now, like 2 years later, if, you know, if we're going to resume those. But I don't think that's not on my radar. I think
I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Actually, because I one of the things I've tried to do also is to stay out of the news cycle. I mean, I still hear things. My father gets the newspaper and he loves talking about this stuff, so he's always commenting upon it. And occasionally I get sucked into this stuff. We just had a state election, so it was sort of hard to avoid all of that stuff. And I commented a little bit about that at my channel. But generally speaking, I stay out of the news cycle, especially international news. A few people at my channel have asked me, what do you think about this thing going on in France? And I've taken a cursory look at it. But I try to stay out of this stuff because realistically, I can't influence whatever happens on the other side of the world. And I think people can get really sucked into this. It's almost like pornography in a sense.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And they get completely absorbed in it. And there's this feeling that because they're on the ball all the time, they're up to date with whatever's going on, they're involved in something and they're progressing or something like that, but they're not. It sucks away all of their intellectual energy. And they don't really have anything to show for it, unless they have a big YouTube channel.
Yeah,
and they just influence other people.
And they're talking about current affairs, then yeah, of course. But the point I was going to make about those month in review hangouts was that, and you complained about this at the time, and I was trying to get it to sort this out, but it was difficult. At the time, it was just one bad news story after another. And I remember one particular month, it might have been the June, it may, or something around that of 2016, when it was just a relentless stream of bad things that had happened throughout Europe relating to the migrant influx. And it was just unbelievable and overwhelming and awful. And I remember you said at the time, this is just too much. And we're getting lost in it. Instead of sort of digesting it and drawing conclusions, we're just getting lost in the maelstrom of bad news. And it's not healthy.
It's really dispiriting. Yeah. It's and I found in the last year, before I came back here, so from the beginning of this year, well, basically most of 2017, there was all of this stuff going on all of the time. It's relentless because there's a media narrative and all of that sort of stuff. And they love celebrating their victories and all of this sort of stuff. And they put a spin on everything and so on. And it's just dispiriting to the point where if you're focused upon that kind of stuff all of the time, you can't do anything else in your life. It's all that you think about.
Yeah, it's all that I was thinking about in 2016.
So I've really tried to cut that noise down. And these days I try to think, does this thing affect me or someone or something that concerns me? That's the first filter. And the second one is, can I do anything about it? Because most of the time I can't, and a lot of the time these things, they don't necessarily affect me or someone or something I care about. I mean, sure, they all play into the culture war and this sort of thing, but it's often in a very indirect sense. But certainly the second filter, can I do anything about it? Because if I can't, then there's a sort of feeling of learned helplessness. You start to revel in your impotence, in a sense.
I think it's very
unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like the cuckold husband. This is all baffling to me, but it seems like the cuckold husband sort of revels in his being weak and, cuckolded.
Yeah,
it's very perverse,
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you just end up being like one of these mainstream conservatives, and you see the things they write in newspapers or the talks they do on YouTube or whatever. It's all this sort of, these crazy leftists, look at these things they're doing. Isn't this so unreasonable? And yet they keep losing.
Yeah.
And they just, they exist almost to suffer and to lose gracefully and to remain on their moral high horse. Because
they're losing for the right reasons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're losing with grace and dignity and yet.
But they're not though. Sort of, that's the thing. They are, in the end, they're not losing with dignity. They're losing as losers.
At least,
you're going to lose, at least lose as a fucking winner who's trying to do things, who's trying to address the situation. But they're just. Yeah. They're just marinating in it.
Yeah.
Even while they talk about it in vituperate, they've really at a deep level given into it.
Yeah, that's right. And so I think getting caught up in the daily news cycle or this event or that event or whatever, it lends itself to that. It pushes people in that direction. And it sucks away all of their energy from doing real things, from accomplishing real things. Because it's very easy to say, look at this latest leftist outrage. Oh, it's crazy. And spend a massive amount of time commenting upon that, worrying about it. But what does that accomplish? In the meantime, they could have done real things. They could have taken baby steps towards something positive.
I do think that the sort of acid test should be, does this help me move forward, or is it just a more sort of reappraisal of the same thing that I appraised yesterday and drawing the very same conclusions that I drew yesterday? Because there should be a sense of that you are progressing and your understanding of things is progressing and your way of reacting to things is developing and improving. And if not, then, and I know that there are, I certainly won't name names, but there are certain YouTubers who I think are very comfortable just talking about the progressives and so on, but never actually moving things forward. And I'm not actually talking about Sargon of Akkad. I know that some people will assume I'm slyly talking about him, but I don't, because he's more complicated. I think he is sort of doing things in the real world. I mean other YouTubers that I wouldn't name, who I think are somehow content to just constantly be amazed at the situation, in the same way that the paleocon is content to be constantly depressed about the situation.
Well, the first thing I want to say actually is I was actually hoping that you could get Sargon of Akkad in here with me for a discussion,
a reunion,
a reunion. Yeah, that's right, a reunion. But some people will get that. I guess the people have been around for longer at your channel. But yeah, I think the problem too is that a lot of people have a direct vested interest in all of this because they know that if they make a video talking about some crazy thing, whatever the big crazy thing is today, then they're going to get a huge number of views, and that directly translates into financial gain for them. So.
Or just continued sustenance on YouTube, like continued life relevance on YouTube.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, look, since I changed this channel and don't comment on any of this kind of stuff, the growth of this channel has been incredibly slow. I went from basically I went to about 10% of my subscribers, and I'm now up to about 20% of my old subscribers. But most of the people who commented a lot, because I try to respond to all of the initial comments under my videos, most of those people are still there and I still interact with them, and that's really good. But look, if I were to comment upon the latest thing, then I could probably have 10 times the number of subscribers easily. But I'm not really interested in that. And that's, I'm fortunate that I don't need to rely upon this for an income, and so I can sort of do whatever I want.
So, yeah, I mean, it is, we could talk for ages about that, the dangers of life as a YouTuber, but I don't want to get into that. What I will say is that in my own case with the sort of outrage porn, in 2015, definitely 2016, those 2 years, there was the constant stuff about Islam in Europe. I mean, I've not talked about, I don't think I've actually talked about Islam for 18 months now on the channel. Because it's just of no, because as I said earlier, you can go on and on and on about it, but it's never something, you're never actually making any progress. So,
yeah. What's and the pause point? As well. I mean, there was a point that it's ongoing, of course, but there was a point there where that was, the left was certainly on a roll for a while there, a couple of years ago with the pause. There's been some pushback now, but yeah, it seemed relentless.
But again, absolutely.
What can you do about that? Just whining about it won't do anything about it. I mean, I have to go shortly actually, because I have to homeschool my son. And one of the ways around the pause is, you know, if you're worried about your kids being exposed to all that nonsense at school, then homeschool your kids. So, you know, I'm trying to live my politics in a very direct way rather than just whining about it. It doesn't always come across that way online, but I'm trying to live my politics.
Right. Okay, so a few final closing remarks.
I think, as I said earlier, I think people need to look at themselves and try to find people of like mind, but also just interact with functional people, I think, and not all functional people are going to be of the same political persuasion. But I think it's important to interact with functional people also, because they can provide a good example to us. And you can learn things from them as well. That's a really important thing. One thing I try to do is I try not to be the best person in the room. I try not to be the smartest person or whatever it is. I always try to be in a place where there's at least one person who's better than me, because that's someone who can teach me something. That's someone that I can aspire to be number one eventually, but I try not to be the best person in the room. So that means that when you're interacting with functional people, they're not necessarily going to be on the same page as you. That's okay. But I would say interact with functional people rather than dysfunctional people. And the rest will sort of take care of itself from there. So as long as you still stick to your principles, the rest will take care of itself, I'd say. But try to bring more function into your life, and to create more function as well. Like the little story of getting my son to say thank you to his sports teacher, and other kids starting to do that as well. Yeah, right. That's what I'd say.
Okay. All right then. Well, reactionary expat / the Franklin. Hope you don't mind if I still refer to you as reactionary expat. Fine. It's just that it has a cozy feel for me. I'm sure for a lot of the viewers. Well, yes. So, expat, thank you for coming back on the channel, and I hope this has been of use to you, and I'm sure that the viewers will have enjoyed hearing from you again.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. I'll leave it for now, and see you in the next one. Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye.